This is WordPress Weekly, your source for the latest news, plugins, and interviews with influential leaders in the WordPress community. Here's your hosts, Jeff Chandler and Marcus Couch.
Welcome to episode 215 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, December 2nd, 2015. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by my West Coast partner, Marcus Couch. Marcus, what's up, man?
Oh, just doing some WordPress stuff, you know. Podcast came up in between.
that sounds interesting. Sounds like a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, development time. And I did a lot of 4.4 release candidate testing today, too.
Awesome. Yeah, speaking of that, we'll get into that when we hit up the news segment, because apparently we totally spaced the news last week because we had such a good time with Chris Lemma.
Oops.
Yeah, oops. And, man, that was an awesome show. We had a lot of great feedback on that and the comments within the show notes. A lot of people were appreciative of seeing what we're thankful for, and a couple other people chimed in with what they're thankful for. So all in all, it's just a great episode and a nice little tradition we have going on here. But tonight, we're going to do something a little different here. It's the first time, maybe the first time ever in the history of the show, that we're going to talk about logos, logo design, the importance of logos, what makes a good logo, and all stuff dealing with logos. And try and stay with us here, because I realize this is an audio-based thing, so I guess you'll have to use your imagination. But, of course, some of the brands out there, you probably already know their logos. You've memorized them in your head. So we're going to talk about something visual here on the show, but I think we'll have some fun with it eventually, and we'll just get some good information out of it regardless. So, Marcus, why don't you tell us who our guest is tonight, who was actually one of my favorite speakers at WordCamp Orange County earlier this year.
That would be Andrew Bergeron, who has created hundreds of graphics and websites under the name Visual Rhythm. Clients range from startups and nonprofits to corporations and small businesses. Andrew is focused on discovering ways to grow his clients' businesses using smart design and the latest in web technologies.
And Andrew, thanks a lot for we finally got you on the show. I know you had to go through hell and high water to get on here, but you're here.
Oh, Matt, no problem at all. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
And thanks again for writing that awesome about page. That makes our jobs a lot easier introducing the guests.
That sounded sort of familiar, yeah, but isn't hearing him read that. Is that me? But yeah.
Yes, that's absolutely, that's you. So, again, you were one of my favorite speakers at WordCamp Orange County, and your session dealt with, you know, the importance of logo design. And it was just cool how you covered all the various logos, and you had some interesting stories behind some of the logos you covered, like the Nike logo and Coca-Cola and some of the others. So we're going to talk about all about that tonight with you, with your vast experience in this. But before we get started here, I want to know, is WordPress something you use or do for a living, and how did you get involved with it?
Yeah, absolutely. I started building WordPress sites maybe 8 years ago. As a freelance web designer / developer, you end up wearing a lot of hats, as I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yes.
And and around that time, you know, 8 years ago, I'd say, was the dawn of CMS, you know, and clients wanted to update their information on their websites. And, you know, there's choices. There's Drupal, there's Joomla, and there was WordPress. And after downloading free copies and opening them up, WordPress intuitively looked the nicest to use from a user experience standpoint and all that, and made the most sense. So that's where I got involved with it. And then since then, I would say a high 99 percentile of everything I built for the web was built in WordPress. So I was always very active in the community and loved the open source thing, and just the whole community around it was great. It's an incredible tool.
So I know you have experience with logos, but what does your agency Visual Rhythm do?
So Visual Rhythm creates brands and builds web-based solutions from a design standpoint for clients. And then we develop those websites typically, or sometimes work with agencies to do that. And lately it's been focused more on UX and UI design, and then a lot of branding as well.
And have you tinkered with themes, you know, into that realm of designs for WordPress?
Yeah, absolutely. I can make a theme from scratch. So certainly, and I've taken themes which exist. I think my first one was Pop Blue back when I first started. But usually I start with something like underscores and then build my custom theme from there.
That's a pretty popular one. So you like to start off with scratch. You just had the basic layout and framework, and then you just add in the images and CSS.
Exactly, and that allows me to really build custom designs for clients. You know, we look at a lot of themes and stuff that's out there and build it. You know, I'm really about building a minimum viable product because a lot of clients don't need what you get in a paid theme. There's too much stuff in there. I want to make it a very simple experience for a client, let's say, who's running a cigar shop in Colorado. That's a friend of mine. And all he wants to do is update his phone number every once in a while, maybe, and add a couple logos for brands he carries, and that's it. And we made a website for him just to do that. So
it's interesting you mention that because as sort of pertinent to our conversation we had with Chris Lemon last week where we talk about WordPress's market share and the types of users that are still coming on board with WordPress and some of these other solutions out there that maybe that's all they want to do is update their website a couple times a year, and maybe WordPress has gotten to that point where it's not as, I don't know, user-friendly, or it's not as easy to grasp as maybe it once was, and maybe they're sort of going to these services now, like a Squarespace or a Wix, where the template's already there, they just plug in their information, and then they're done, and they just update it every now and then. I mean, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that's always nice about WordPress is it's free, right? And so for a person to start as a developer from that stance and to be able to sell it to a client, it's more attractive. I haven't really used Squarespace enough to really know how easy it is on the back end to use versus WordPress, so I couldn't really necessarily speak on that. I'll say this, I wish there was a couple more things in WordPress that were sort of baked into it. I don't think people should have to, like, pay for spam protection. Like, a client doesn't understand what AskImmet is or why they need it, and trying to sell that to them isn't a really easy thing. So I wish WordPress kind of tied up some of that stuff to make it easier. But for the most part, I think it's really easy to use, and my clients enjoy it. You know, some people grab it and run with it and get really into it. So it's always been fun to train people to use it.
And do you do things like fancy up the back end for clients? You know, being such a design-oriented guy, do you create a custom admin menus and dashboards and things like that?
Exactly. Yeah, I mess with the dashboard a little bit, you know, to add like a custom post type and get into the functions.php file and maybe even add some custom logos in there. It just depends on the scope of the project. But for the most part, you know, I just try to keep it, again, like as minimal as possible. I just did a one-page website for a local gallery, and they, you know, show 8 paintings a month. And it's just a simple little, you know, I guess I could have used an Instagram feed, but they don't use Instagram. So I just set them up to upload these pictures, and that's all they do with WordPress is upload those 8 pictures. Then it's like a little mini blog. And it works for them to sell that artwork that they're basically collecting from auction houses and that sort of stuff. So it's appropriate for their needs.
Nice. So I want to ask, being a logo guy and a graphics guy, what's your background? Did you start with print, or did you go right into web design?
Back fine art. That's what I guess, originally went to school for. I used to like painting and watercolors a whole lot when I was younger. I realized, I think, one day when I was reading Newsweek magazine in the late 90s, that a graphic designer made more money than an artist. So I said, hey, I'll take up graphic design because I still get to be creative. And that led to doing a lot of CD covers and logos for local businesses in Burlington, Vermont, where I grew up, and doing just flyers, newspaper ads, that kind of stuff. I had a mentor back then who allowed me to work on his website and paid me a little bit extra. I think it was like $15 an hour or something, and that was really big money for me then. He said, yeah, learn HTML. So I kind of made that transition from print strictly to web, and then have always sort of hybrid between the two of them since then.
How long did it take you to use the marketing tech?
Say it one more time.
Oh yeah, I heard an echo there. How long did it take you to learn and use the marquee tag in HTML?
I don't know that I use the marquee tag in HTML.
Oh well, that's a good sign then.
Okay, good. Yeah, I'm not sure familiar, but that's okay.
And so what is, you know, being a school designer and things, what's your impression when you see sites like Fiverr and all that in terms of the logos?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. That was sort of the inspiration for my talk. It's interesting that people devalue things like, and not only logos, but websites. You know, you can get a website on Fiverr apparently for $20 or like a WordPress site. And I think it risks devaluing the craft that goes into building something like a logo or a website has. However, I think also maybe the positive out of it is it's a starting point for a lot of businesses who don't want to spend $3,000 on a logo. They just need something to get started. And if that's fine, and if they make good pizza or they're a good plumber, then their business is going to grow, but then they'll see the value in having a good logo, because that would be the one thing that they always wish they had, a better logo or a better website, because at some point way back when they spent $50 or $500 on a website their nephew built, you know. And that's what Fiverr is, basically. It's a right. Gateway.
It's like a five-star chef driving by a McDonald's, really.
Sure. Or like, I mean, it's unbelievable. It's like, would you spend that much on a sandwich, you know? $5, it's insanity. But that's, you know, it's what it is. It's a reflection of the, you know, the global economy. And even in my talk, you know, Jeff saw, you know, I gave an example. I actually had three designers do a logo for me, and I paid them through Fiverr to show as an example of what you get for $5. And I think the results spoke for themselves.
That was actually one of my favorite parts of your presentation. So I got to imagine... and you've probably had a few of these requests in your day. Someone contacts you and says, can you design me a simple logo? I don't know if there is such a thing as a simple logo. I mean, I know some of the logos I've seen are simple, but I imagine the creative process that goes into them is not simple. So what kind of effort goes into designing a simple logo?
Interesting. Well, first, helping a client define, as you say, what simple means, which is always kind of scary. But logos, a good logo should be simple and should be minimal. I like to really have clients talk to me about who their target audience is. Those are conversations marketers use, web designers use, you know, just to get an idea behind who we're really trying to target. We look for inspiration from a number of sources, and sometimes a client doesn't have any inspiration, and that has to be my job, or sometimes they have a lot of inspiration, and you have to work with them based on some legacy existing thing that they won't let go of, you know, and that's okay. They might like purple ducks, and that's going to be in the logo no matter what you suggest, but some people come to you with a blank whatever, and you can suggest a lot. You know, either is okay. A good designer should be able to handle that. You know, I make sure the logo, just for some really basic things, the logo at the end of the day needs to scale, because it might be on Twitter on your phone, and it might be 10 by 10 pixels big, or it might be on a billboard, and it's got to look the same on both and not break down. It's going to look good in black and white, because you don't necessarily always have control of your logo. Lots of people will take your logo to use it for something, and if they're going to apply a color to it, or you just never know where it's going to end up, if it looks good in black and white, that's going to give you the best chance of that thing holding up. And then really great logos, you know, should be unique and look different and not be, you know, the same leaf you see on the back of every economic or hybrid car or something like that. You know, it's got to be a really good logo, should really stand out. I guess you asked me about a simple logo, so maybe I'm...
Well, that was going to be my next question. What qualities make up a memorable logo? But you pretty much nailed them there. I guess the opposite to that is what are some things that define a poor logo design? Obviously, I'd say based on, you know, watching your presentation, using multiple colors, using one too many elements, maybe.
Yeah, bevel, shadow, and glow.
Yeah, bevel, shadow, and glow. There you go.
Right. It's adding detail that's superfluous and not really thought through. Put it this way, color won't save your design. It will enhance a good one, but it won't save a bad one. It's kind of like the famous quote, I'll maybe say my uncle told me this, but I know he didn't make it up, that you can't polish a turd. You know, you can't just take something that has no integrity behind it, it doesn't symbolize anything, and just slap some color on it. It doesn't work that way. And that gets back to what you were saying when someone says, can you make me a simple logo? And that often happens, and that was another reason I wanted to speak at WordCamp, because I know so many designers are in that seat, the web people, and the client will say, or the web designer will say, what's your logo? And the client hands them an ugly old business card out of their wallet. Says, can you scan that in and throw it in the corner? And it's like, that's, you can't throw a logo in the corner. You can't, you know, it's not something you slap together like a sandwich. It's a thoughtful piece of art, and it's probably going to drive the entire look and feel of your whole website. And so it's really important you get it right. And if you don't get it right the first time, at least, like, have some thought behind it. Just don't pick a dog because you own dogs. Like, think about what this means, you know. It could be a dog, but at least have the thought behind it why you picked that.
So, Marcus, I wanted to play a little game. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. Let's maybe five or six total. We'll see if, you know, Andrew can't play in this game because he probably knows all the answers. But what are some, if you just use your imagination, if you just think of the brand's logo, give me some companies or brands that you know of that you can identify immediately just based off their logo.
Monster, the energy drink.
I would say Target, the store with the Target symbol.
Gas stations are often symbolic with just the logo, so that you're, you know, familiar, whether that be Chevron or Gulf or whatever, you know, whatever it happens to be in terms of the oil company near you.
I'd go with Best Buy, and I'd go with pretty much every major vehicle manufacturer. You can identify it. Of course, it helps when they use their name in the logo.
Right. I would say also car companies, as you mentioned, and then
sports teams.
Absolutely. Sports. Absolutely. Like the Chicago Bulls, you know, they got the most iconic logo in sports in terms of that, and that was designed in the 60s, and they still use the same one today.
Man, I wanted to say something there about the Bulls, but, oh, boy, I'm just going to bite my tongue.
Unlike the Cavs, who switch their logo every few years.
Oh, okay, you know what? Listen, I was nice here. I didn't say anything. But Andrew, I've noticed if you really take a hard look at some of the most memorable, iconic logos, every curve, every pixel, every portion of that logo has a purpose, every curve, every point. Every dot, every character, everything about that logo has a purpose, right down to the last pixel. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. And those, every logo you guys just mentioned are absolutely, they do that. You know, they do exactly what
I don't know this history, and perhaps you do, Andrew, but what was the first logo? Like, what was the first iconic logo that the world knew?
Wow. Jeez, man, you're talking like hieroglyphics, right?
I wonder.
And that's what you're really, really defining, because, you know, it becomes so ancient, and you even made a good point that, you know, some logos haven't changed since the 60s. Some logos haven't changed in 100 years, and that's, you know, it says a lot about the value of it. You know, you buy a website for $10,000, and it's junk in 5 years. You buy a logo for $10,000, and it'll be around longer than you. Or your business, and I, you know, I would be willing to bet Apple's logo is going to look very similar to the logo we see today, and really has evolved just since the logo we saw when it first started. They've actually reduced it. Volkswagen's a great example. Canon cameras, if you want to look up a fun one. John Deere has an old school logo of it. It's beautiful, and they've just reduced it, but it's still a deer jumping over a thing, and has the word John Deere on it.
And that's one of the points I think we should make is that. Some of the logos haven't changed, but logos don't have to stay the same all the time. It can evolve over time along with your company, correct?
Yeah, as it should. I think Burton Snowboards is a great example of that. And that's, of course, I grew up around that company in Burlington, Vermont. But, you know, seeing their logo evolve from the 80s when snowboarding was first around, and it almost evolved every year and you were waiting for it to evolve, but it still had certain themes to it. And it was really neat to sort of see that happen in real time. So absolutely, a good brand can do that and can reinvent itself.
So one of the things One of these questions I have for you is how do you suggest businesses create a logo that has a unified definition instead of meaning many things to many people? I mean, is it better to have a logo that means one thing that is identifiable to a company, or a logo that all kinds of different people have different associations with based on maybe their background or story or how they relate to the brand?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. I think it really depends on the company and their intentions. You know, I don't think that, WordPress, for example, that logo, the monogram, the W, could represent something to writers, because if it's a letter and it looks like nice typography, so it attracts designers and that sort of thing. You know, and I think like certain logos don't want to become other things. I gave the example in my talk about the political logos that are used, and sometimes associations can get made in a logo that you don't want. Not to pick on Marco Rubio, but he uses the symbol of the United States as the dot in his eye, which is fine on his logo and the name, but he leaves out the states of Hawaii and Alaska. So if he wants any vote, this wasn't really thought out. You know, why wouldn't you do that?
Well, what does he have against Hawaiians and Alaskans?
Right. Maybe, who knows? You know, maybe he doesn't, but that's not one you want to go like dupes when you're on CNN and running for president. You know, you kind of want to think about that through a little bit. You know, Hillary Clinton got picked on hers for a little bit. People said it looked like the FedEx logo. I happen to like it. I think Hillary's meets a lot of the marks of a good logo. You know, there's another one. Again, I feel like I'm being politically biased, and I'm really not, but I'm just discussing them purely from a logo perspective. Ted Cruz's logo looks a little bit like a teardrop, which is concerning. You know, is he crying? Is he sad? No. I just don't know. You know, Bernie's is pretty standard, run-of-the-mill. There's not a whole lot there that you can interpret, and maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it's a strong thing. His looks like kind of, maybe in a sense it's bland, but it's not offensive. I think Paul Rand has a really good logo, too. He uses sort of the Lady Liberty flame above his.
If Trump actually gets the nomination, maybe he's going to just be Trump in gold, right? He's going to stop.
Have you seen the internet meme where they took the Obama logo, someone? It was a brilliant thing, and they turned it 180 upside down and just painted it all gold, and it looks like Trump's face. it's
unbelievable.
Uncanny. I'll send it, and it's like you couldn't have seen that coming, which is what's so brilliant about it. I'll send you the image. You'll laugh. You'll love it.
That's incredible how you can create something to look like one thing, and somebody sees something entirely different in it.
Exactly. I laughed out loud when I saw that. I was like, you know, you're sitting in bed looking at Twitter when you wake up, and I was like, that's genius. Like, oh my gosh, I can't believe everybody does that.
So, what are some of the tools you use if you're going to create a logo for somebody? What are some of the tools you use to create those designs?
Yeah, I mean, I start with a sketch pad. I'm going to say my background's an artist, so I'm drawing. I get right down to a sketch pad and do dirty little sketches, and I'll take a picture of my iPhone and send it to the client. Say, here's our concepts. Moving from there to make vector art, I use Illustrator. That's why I like drawing in, I guess, to build logos. It's probably the standard most people use, I suppose, to build nice vectors.
Right, and what vectors are, for those who don't know, for our listeners, is that is what allows a graphic creating an illustrator to scale up or down and not lose quality.
Yes, exactly. So the difference between a vector art and rasterized, so like a photo in Photoshop, you know, is made up of dots, and those dots, as they get bigger, lose their quality. Vector art is made on an X and Y axis, kind of like we learned about in geometry class, to draw shapes. So if you expand it and contract it, like Jeff says, you know, you'll lose resolution, basically, and it stays nice and sharp.
So one of the cool stories you shared in your presentation was that I found very interesting is behind the Nike logo. If you remember the details behind that logo, go ahead and share that with our audience.
Sure. The Nike logo was an amazing story. The girl who designed it, I wish I knew her name off the top of my head, but it's on my slide. I would look it up. Anyway, she was working for who was eventually going to become the CEO of Nike, but she was in his class, actually, as a student and doing some freelance work for his side project. He paid her $35 for that original logo and said to her, he's well famously quoted to say, like, I didn't really like it at first, but it would grow on me. And it's just, you know, shows you again the value of that. The story has a great punchline because years later, he hands her, when I think the IPO came out of Nike, he gave her an envelope full of stocks. So she got paid royally for the fact. He realized the value much later, and it's a great thesis example of exactly what I'm trying to, you know, express to this whole, you know, why I like talking about logos with people.
Yeah, her name was Carolyn Davidson, and it's called the Nike Swoosh logo, and it was created in 1971.
So yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, there's a proof that a logo stays the same. Nikes look different now and again. They've dropped the name Nike, but today we're still looking at the same swoosh.
Yeah, it is pretty incredible. It's still there. I mean, the same swoosh from 71 is still there on all their shoes and all their brands, and that's how you know it's Nike, is that swoosh checkmark.
Yeah, and all over the world. I mean, things, logos like the Nike Swoosh, Coca-Cola, that's universal.
Translated.
that's the beauty, and what's really powerful, I even think, as a designer about visual art, that you can make something like that. You know, you can be in Mozambique and order a Coca-Cola, and they're going to get that right. That might be the one thing you get right at the restaurant when you make an order, when you say Coca-Cola, because everybody sees it, and they all know what that is. And Nike's the same thing. They recognize it instantly. It's almost more popular than religion in some ways, you know, religious symbols in the modern world anyway.
And, you know, you bring that up, and it's very interesting because I've made this observation. Mm-hmm. The things that are logos, like the Apple logo, for instance, I think in terms of religion are very similar in their iconic and icon-like features, like people would promote the Apple icon as if it were a cross or something like that, to show their sort of belief in the technology and that side of the fence, so to speak. And you see it, people put it on the back of their cars, on the back window, a little Apple or whatever.
Well, like the WordPress logo, putting the WordPress sticker all over their MacBooks everywhere.
Exactly.
Yeah. So people will get a free T-shirt at the event and go pay for a T-shirt. And I think that's great. And I think what that comes down to, what you're talking about, is, you know, logos represent the values of a company. And the value of Apple, I think we can all, I mean, it's okay, I guess, if any of us are on PCs, but the point is Apple carries a lot of, like, that value and quality, and that's what that symbol represents to those people. And that's why they wear it. Or promote it, or put the sticker on their book. Volcom is a snowboard, skateboard, surf company, and kids wear that like it's a tattoo. They love, because it's alternative and a little bit underground, not considered, like, for a long time, it wasn't considered like a mainstream company. And so that represented that counterculture. The Obey symbol by Shepard Fairey has that same sort of counterculture, like, quality. And again, it represents a lot of things to a lot of people. So you're absolutely right. It's very, very similar to those religious symbols from back then. In fact, the word logo even means its lineage in Latin. It comes from the word logic, or the word. It actually has that root, the word itself.
And I wonder, because we talked about that question, what was the first logo? And I wonder if the Christian cross was one of the first logos.
Careful. Because you're talking math before that, but you're right. I see where you're coming from, and I completely agree with you. But it does get back really ancient to where these things, the equal sign, the plus sign, all those things. And those, we might be talking about symbols, but logos at a certain point were those things, you know, before it became brands. And I think maybe the question we want to get more granular and say, what was the first company brand that people saw? And maybe that was in Europe or Japan or something, where manufacturing started and people manufactured something that needed sort of a symbol for it that wasn't just religiously based. But I'm sure at some point, yeah, because you saw those, you said, cross, these are my folks. Like, yeah. I'm in Canada. I have no idea where I've been traveling. These are my people. Like, let's hang out. And that's what brought that symbol, brings them together.
Huh. After this conversation, I'm going to have to look up on Wikipedia, because Wikipedia is always right about this stuff, about the first company brand. I'm sure it's on there somewhere. So yeah. one of the cool quotes I saw here that you had in your presentation is that flyers become litter, magazines are recycled, websites quickly become outdated, but unlike these other types of design, a logo is timeless, end quote. And I think that's right on. I think everything else comes and goes, but the logo, you know, stays around, sticks on. It's, you know, it's a legacy.
Mm.
If done correctly, it could be a legacy.
Right. Yeah, exactly. There's your value right there. That's why you don't want to spend $5 on it and take that chance. Because they'll be like, remember that guy had that pizza place? Yeah, his pizza was good, but man, his logo was terrible. They'll remember that.
I can't tell you how many guys I've seen hand me a card that just has a computer on it. With their
right.
name. Right? Or clip right. art. Clip art, the scourge of design.
Mm-hmm. Before we wrap it up here, Marcus, any other questions we want to ask Andrew here before we let him go?
Well, I think we covered a lot, and there's two points I want to make. One is, I mean, I hope that this for the listener reinforces the importance of a logo and overall the importance of graphic elements. So when you've got a good logo, that's the first step, even if it's as small as what you see the little Twitter avatar icon image. I mean, a good logo will catch your eye as you're scrolling through your feed. And then second, I just want to suggest to the listeners this French short film that I saw recently called Logorama, where the entire thing is like an animated, I think it's only 20 minutes long, where they take iconic logos and things like that and do this kind of gangster crime scene parody. The logo characters like the Michelin Man and Ronald McDonald and things, but very interesting to see their play on logos itself. And I don't think you can go through the movie without recognizing at least several hundred of the logos that are represented throughout. But Andrew, thank you so much for lending your expertise to the show today and for joining us. I know that we've tried to reschedule you a couple times, and I'm glad that we finally got you. You know, best of luck to you and your company, and hopefully we can start to see some of those iconic brands coming straight from your hand.
Hey, thanks so much. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me. I really, really appreciate it.
Before you go, do you have any speaking engagements? And tell people where they can get in touch with you, or maybe they're interested in your services, where they can go and find them.
Sure, thanks. No speaking engagements on the radar yet, but you'll probably find me at a WordCamp in Southern California area within the next year, so stay tuned. You can see my work and portfolio at visualrhythm.com and find me at Visual Rhythm on all the various social media outlets. I'm on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Dribbble, so get in touch with me through any of those. Love to hear from anybody who's out there who's listening.
Excellent, and pleasure having you on the show, and of course we'll link up to your site here in the show notes, but thanks again for coming on and giving it, sharing your expertise, and maybe our listeners picked up a thing or two.
That sounds great. I really appreciate it, Jeff. It was great to chat with you.
Thank you. So that was Andrew Bergeron of Visual Rhythm, and learned a little bit about logos, and I thought the show would go about that way, and it was pretty good. I got to learn about logos. And Marcus, like I said, it's interesting when you look at, you put all these logos in front of you, and you could just, the shape, the color, the curves, everything about a logo has its purpose, and they're memorable.
Yeah, and in fact, I worked with a client last year that had a logo that was, I don't know, it looked like it was done in some weird 3D program, or somebody took a 3D effect in Word and kind of butchered it, and they presented it to me, and I'm like, man, you got to really modern this up. And I literally just hired a designer that I think we spent a couple $100 to just make a flat version of the existing logo that we already had. And not only did it, by the way, this is one of the important elements of logos, which is when you get into cheaper colors, and as Andrew mentioned about, you know, how it looks in black and white and things like that, it gets cheaper to print that and silkscreen that and do things with it that a regular four-color process or, you know, full-color, in other words, logo would cost you to, like, print on shirts and, you know, items and things like that. So Very, very interesting conversation, and I know that the listeners probably at least got a couple of great nuggets out of that in terms of how to represent themselves and their clients in logo form.
So let's dive into a bit of WordPress news, shall we, considering sure. we spaced it last week. Last time I checked, I was checking during the show before the news segment, WordPress 4.4 release candidate 2 has not yet been released. Of course, many of the core dev team members are at the WordPress Community Summit just days before WordCamp US, which is later on this weekend, so most of them are together. I am sure that they're hard at work on WordPress 4.4, so I imagine we'll see release candidate 2 either later on tonight or tomorrow, maybe sometime by the end of the week, because it's scheduled, 4.4 is scheduled to be shipped next week by Tuesday, December 8th, but deadlines are not arbitrary, and depending on how things go, that date could shift. It might be delayed a week. We'll see. But for those of you interested, there is at least the first release candidate is available, so you can use that on your website. And, of course, back up first if you're going to use it in a production environment. But if you have a testing site available with the same plugins you use on your real site, now is an excellent time. And now is a real excellent time to install and use the latest version of WordPress just to test and see if you run into any issues, because there were a lot of things committed to this release, a lot of things fixed, especially dealing with comments. And whenever it's released, of course, me and Marcus will give you a rundown of everything that's new in 4.4 after it's released. And, of course, Marcus, you said you've been doing a lot of 4.4 testing. What do you think so far?
I like it. I like the responsive images a lot. I even tested it out on an iPad and flipped it side to side to get the different resolutions to take a look at it. And I don't know, man. It seems to me like it renders better. I can't tell, but it just seems clearer for some reason, the images. It may all just be my perception, but that's the way it works. I am trying to learn as much as I can about taxonomy meta and see exactly what I could use that for in a development environment, and not just a development environment, but also a synchronous environment that would go to like other, CRM platforms like Salesforce and, Infusionsoft and those types of things, because you could sort of embed different lead fields and things that you would typically track an incoming lead with taxonomy meta based on, you know, some custom elements that go along with that. And if that's the case and you can hook an API into that, that's pretty powerful. That's like, that's like using your entire WordPress site as a lead form that could do wondrous things. I'm also experimenting with something a little bit with the WordPress API where it embeds text on top of an image, and it doesn't do it. It does it so it saves it as an image. So what could you use that for? Making certificates for people that go through classes. It actually dumps a hard image file that then gets emailed or what have you over to that person. There's a lot to it, and even things like if somebody doesn't renew their account, you could have a picture of your entire workforce team holding up one big sign that says, "Jeff, please come back." You know, and it looks just like it was on the sign with the same handwritten font and things. So a lot of stuff I'm tinkering around with in terms of APIs. So that's just what I've experimented with thus far. I'm sure that once the official version comes out, there'll probably be some more features in it that I'm still not aware of.
So our next story, which is sort of ironic to me, because I remember we did an episode where you had questioned, Jeff, I wonder if there's any site out there or any way you can get the data behind how many plugins have been added to the directory and all kinds of yes. other data. And it's like 2 days later, I come across a post that shows exactly the kind of data you've been interested in. And it was by Luca Procassi. He's the founder of Addendio, which is actually an alternative search engine for the WordPress plugin and theme directories. And what he did was published an in-depth look at the WordPress plugin directory. So he has all these different data points from average amount of plugins that are updated per year over the years since they've been added, percentage of update. I mean, there's all kinds of different data points, but one of my favorite ones is, in fact, a data point that you're interested in, Marcus, where you can actually see the number of plugins approved to the directory per year. Now, in 2014, there were 7,108 plugins added to the directory, and at the time this data was compiled, which was back on around November 20th, there were 6,692 plugins. So I think we may be on pace for another record year, but just barely.
Hmm. So that would bring it to how many in 2014?
Well, in 2014,
what was the total? 7,108. That's
unbelievable. 7,108 plugins were added to the directory in 2014.
Which brought it to a total of how many? Like 20? Was that the 20,000 mark?
Oh, now that I don't know. I would have to look into more of the data to see if to figure that out. But at least we have the total amount per year, so that's a start.
Yeah, because I'm wondering if it's 7,000 that got added, you know, what is the percentage of growth in terms of, like, is it going to double every 3 years in terms of the amount of plugins? Kind of like a Moore's Law type of scenario that I'm looking for when technology doubles itself every 6 years or whatever the law used to be. But that's pretty impressive. That's a lot of plugins. 7,000 plugins, that's like, what is that, 20 a day, right?
Well, something to that effect. And but one of the highlights of this data is that about 22,000 plugins have been updated in the last 24 months, which represents a little more than half the directory, which is just over 40,000 plugins at this point. And what this means is, well, approximately half of the plugins in the directory are displaying that notice that you see if a plugin hasn't been updated in 2 years or more. So a lot of discussion has been going on to the fact, well, what is going on here? Why are almost half of the plugins in the directory haven't been updated within 2 years or more? And, you know, there's any number of reasons. For example, the developer burns out. He's not getting enough donations. The plugin doesn't need an update. It works just fine. Maybe support is too much of a burden, or maybe they just uploaded the plugin and hope it solves the problem for somebody else, and that's it. They have no intention of doing anything else with it than, you know, having it on the directory. But I don't think it spells doom and gloom for the directory or anything else. But I do think users should take note that, you know, it's a little bit disturbing, I think, to me that most. About half the plugins in the directory are not updated after 2 years. I guess a word of caution to our listeners is keep up on plugins, and, you know, if it hasn't been updated in more than 2 years, you might want to see if you can replace it with one that's newer, you know, because it doesn't look like the odds are terrible of it ever being updated past the 2 year mark.
That's true. But some things, you know, there's other reasons why they don't get updated. Sometimes they're just simple little things, right, that don't really need it. I've seen other ones that were abandoned, and then somebody just picked it up and said, hey, this is based on plugin XYZ. It's now called XYZ Pro, or, you know what I mean? So it's a mixed bag. But, yes, there are a lot of plugin orphans out there that desperately need help.
So there's that data to go by. And speaking of plugins, and this might help with the updating situation, earlier today, it was a really cool service that launched by Vova Feldman and his team of four people. It's called Freemius Insights. And what this is, it's a service and allows plugin authors to hook into the service. And what it does, it presents the user an opt-in screen. And if the user opts in, are able, a lot of data regarding their use and their website is sent back to Freemius, and it, which is given to the plugin author. So the developer can see data such as, you know, the active sites, how many users are connected, plugin versions, WordPress versions, PHP versions, In fact, one of the coolest things is if a user uninstalls your plugin, it will automatically pop up this form asking you to give a reason why you're uninstalling it. And in most cases than not, users are more than willing to tell you why they're uninstalling something or why it was broke or why it didn't meet their needs. And Freemius is able to compile this data for you. So you have all this kind of cool data in the background, and you could plugin authors can leverage this data to maybe use it to tailor specific upsells to specific users. And you can even see specific websites that they're using your plugin, which is something the plugin directory doesn't do by default. Now, I know some people out there will think, whoa, 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 that sounds like that's overreaching with the privacy. But the fact of the matter is the first thing that happens when you activate a plugin that uses Freemius is the opt-in form. It tells you, hey, would you like to opt in and send this data to the developer? And there's a button that says skip. Now, if you hit the skip button, no data is sent. It's as if, you know, you install the plugin for free, nothing's happening. But if you decide to opt in, the plugin author gets all that data, and hopefully the plugin author uses that data to improve the plugin by determining which new features they should be developing or what new translations they should be working on most, because they can tell which language of the majority of the websites are using their plugin. So there's all kinds of data points that Freemius enables plugin authors to have, which in turn allows them to make data-driven based decisions. And I had a chance to go through it all. I wrote a big long review or introduction of it on the Tavern. And I think it's a really cool product and something that, you know, to me, a lot of plugin developers have been complaining about the lack of concrete granular data on a WordPress plugin directory, and Freemius solves that problem. And the best thing about it is if you're operating a plugin that's free and you don't make any money off of it, you can also use Freemius for free. There's a free plan available. So, I mean, you can get all that data and check it out for free. And, you know, if you like what you see or you want more data, you want the chance to export the emails to, you know, a different service like MailChimp, then you could pay for the plan.
I wonder if it has options to where you can actually subscribe to plugin news via email through that service.
Yes, that's
one
of the things on there. So what the in fact, yeah, it has one of those where you know the plugin author can actually email you things that are in the new version of the plugin. They can email you about whatever. As long as they have your email address, they can email you whatever they want. You know?
Yeah.
So there's that.
Interesting. Well, I look forward to that. I wonder if they're branching out into themes someday too.
Well, apparently I talked to Feldman, and he says that if you modified a couple of the webhooks and things with the service, like the API, you can actually get it to work with themes. But they are right now, they've just come out of beta. They're working with plugin authors, but I imagine depending on how this takes off, they'll probably branch off into themes as well. And I know a lot of theme authors will. I think it'd be really cool if you knew which sites your theme is used on. Instead of just knowing active sites, you could actually see the domains that the site is listed on. I think that'd be neat.
Yeah, you could. You
know, also, if I was a theme author, I would think that was neat.
Yeah, you could troll them and look for the greatest ones and great examples and use case scenarios. And also, that's a good opportunity for the developer to be able to go see what happens in the wild with their plugin / theme whenever that comes around. Because then that's the greatest difference in somebody who's a developer and somebody who's typically a marketer, is sometimes the developer doesn't think things all the way through. Sorry to my developer friends out there, but from a business perspective. And when you start to see use cases out there, they get maybe a little bit different look at something that they wouldn't typically see otherwise. So that's very hard to go and find the locations and the domains of the people that are using your plugin. So that's why I feel this idea is pretty worthy.
Yeah. I mean, let's say for example, you have a plugin and maybe you have an agency and you can see that some big name, high profile websites are using your plugin. Well, you could either, if you have their email address, if they opted in, you can tailor specific upsells to them or different products to them, or you can even get in touch with them and say, hey, I notice you're using my plugin on your site. You may be interested in these other services I offer because I have this agency. If you have any work, you know, I'm available. I mean, there's all kinds of different ways smart developers can leverage this type of data to increase profits. You know, this data can be used as lead gen material.
And that would help the developer knowing that going into the programming cycle and the development cycle of a plugin, knowing that you will have user feedback along the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's really cool stuff, being able to get feedback immediately as to why people were uninstalling it. That's crucial feedback that developers usually don't get. And when they do get it, it's usually in the form of a 1-star review with no explanation. And that doesn't help anybody.
Right. Yep, exactly.
So speaking of, boy, we're on a plug-in kick here today, and we still got to do your picks of the week.
Yeah.
I know a number of readers have contacted us through the WP Tavern contact form, and they've been wanting us to report on the issues people have been having with the release cycle of WordPress SEO, the 3.0 branch. Now, it was released back on November 18th, and since that time, the team behind it, the development team, has released 6-point releases to fix major bugs. Now, 3.0 was a major update. It included a lot of different user interface changes, a lot of different features. And, you know, this plugin is used on more than a million sites. So, of course, they're going to run into issues. But Joost de Valk published a very lengthy blog post that pretty much apologizes to their users and explains what happens. And essentially, they need more beta testers. Even though they have an extensive group, they need to make that group larger. And this is a problem that even WordPress faces, where you have a lot of people testing the software, but you really don't understand all the edge cases and bugs that you missed until the end user, you know, everyone uses that stable version. I'm doing air quotes with the stable version. That's when you really understand all the things that you miss, and that's when you discover all the bugs. So I think that's just a common problem with software used by a lot of people. And he also mentions that there is a communication breakdown in terms of supporting his users. And all in all, they're going to work on improving everything, including the software. But unfortunately, I've seen this from many people through different channels, and WordPress SEO has a bad reputation from people on breaking things, whether it's functionality in the plugin or the site it's hosted on, with each upgrade, even if it's a point release. And it's going to take quite a few successful releases to start to erode that negative reputation, if it's even possible to get rid of it. So good luck to them. And if you're using WordPress SEO, right now the latest version is 3.0.6, which fixes a lot of issues with the 3.0 branch. I would recommend upgrading to that. And that's really what's going on over there with the WordPress SEO plugin.
And if you're not sure if you have WordPress SEO installed, just look at your WordPress dashboard and see if there are annoying pop-ups on the top.
Yeah, it's pretty hard. I know you're using it.
If you got them there, chances are you've probably got it installed.
So there you have it. Then that wraps up this week's WordPress News of the Week. Marcus, I guess, hey, we're on a plug-in roll. Let's roll into your picks.
You got it, man. First one here is called Featured Image Reminder. It is by Aaron Hockley from Vancouver, Washington, who I found out is also the founding organizer of WordCamp Portland.
He saved me at WordCamp Orange County. He's the one that gave me the hydration materials.
Oh, nice. Well, he's getting his payback here. Karma. Awesome. It wasn't even prompted. So this plugin, Featured Image Reminder, is nothing more than just a pop-up confirmation dialog box that if you try and publish a post that does not have a featured image, it comes up with a little pop-up that says, hey, this doesn't have a featured image. Are you sure you want to put it out? And you can click yes and obviously put it out, but it's a nice reminder to not publish before you have that featured image. So it's short and sweet. It's called Featured Image Reminder. Next one. This one is very handy. So anybody who uses WooCommerce who has multiple products, this is your plugin. It's called Cart Links for WooCommerce. It is by Soft79, as they're known in the repository. I couldn't find any other information or website or anything like that. What it does is it allows the shop manager of WooCommerce, or you, if it's just you as the admin, to create custom URLs that will redirect a customer to a fully populated cart. So basically what you do is you load up the cart, and then you can save kind of the short link, or whatever you want to call it, to that populated cart. And then if you're going to have an email list, you say, hey, I've got a special on these three products. And you make a button and you link it to the cart, and away you go. You've got a fully populated cart. All they've got to do is pay for it and not go through some crazy landing page or anything like that. And, you know, off you go. So I thought it was a really cool concept that a lot of people should start using in their marketing via email. It's called Cart Links for WooCommerce. And finally, this one is really nice. It's an alternative to the audio player that comes with WordPress. It is by Raymond Rade. He is from France. It is called Wavesurfer WP. Now, what it does is, instead of just the plain old audio bar, this actually has visualization that looks like the wave file that kind of scrolls through as you're playing, which I thought was really neat. And it added a really nice stylized element to the website that I didn't have previously. So it does a mix of different audio, podcasts, streaming. You can do e-learning, which is great because then they can kind of follow along and see where they were. You can put it in music or all of that kind of stuff. It does a really nice job, and it looks really nice, and it's really easy to implement as well. So it is called Wavesurfer WP, and those are my plug-in picks of the week.
Awesome. So on next week's show, again, we mentioned earlier that WordCamp US is taking place this weekend. So next Wednesday, we'll talk about the release of WordPress 4.4, if it happened. If not, no big deal. We'll tell you about the latest RC release. But we will be having a sizable roundtable. We'll talk about we'll be recapping WordCamp US. So we're going to have, so far I have Michelle Butcher, Kiko Dorn, who's been on the show before, Nick Vimil of Tech Vaults, and who else do we have? Chris Wingman, who will also be on the show. So we're going to have a full house next Wednesday, and we're just going to run down people's experiences, what they thought about WordCamp US, and that's pretty much all we're going to talk about next week is WordCamp US, and then of course plug and picks of the week. But yeah, we're going to have a full house next week.
Yes, it's only half as much as you get on WP Water Cooler.
And so, I'm actually going to be watching the live stream. Marcus, will you be watching any of the live stream this weekend?
I will, absolutely.
Okay. All right, so you and I will. I can't wait to see Matt's State of the Word address. He always has a lot of tidbits in there and drops some information.
Is there going to be a chat room, you think? Is there going to be a dedicated, are we all using Twitter this year for our commentary on the stream?
I don't know. I took a look at the stream page and looks like it's just video, but we'll have to see. I mean, I know there's the hashtag WCUS for Twitter, but it would be nice if the chat and video were all in one place. Well, hopefully I'll have to take a look at the video page again and see if that's there. But that's what we got going on for next week. Until then, you can find show notes for this episode and every other episode on WPTavern.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jeffro, that's JeffroR0. And Marcus?
You can find me at my website, MarcusCouch.com, on Twitter at MarcusCouch.
All right, so everybody, enjoy the rest of your week. Hope everyone's having a good time there in Philadelphia. If not, hope everyone's watching the stream. And we're going to talk all about WordCamp US next week. Everybody have a safe trip back home. Everybody else enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday evening.